Digital Flotsam is made possible by the generous support of the Robert Wood Johnson Company, makers of prosthetic Wood Johnsons for more than half a century, because nothing feels better than wood.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Radio Free Radio's Digital Flotsam. I am your host, P.W. Fenton. I come from a family of teasers and jokers. Oh, everybody's got some teasers and jokers in their family, but my family had serious professional-grade teasers and jokers. And it was from that stock that I developed my own appreciation for the practical joke. I'll explain in a moment why I'm calling this edition Lydia's Legacy. Of all the teasers and jokers in my family, no one was more diabolical. No one was more prolific. No one was more skilled than my Aunt Lydia. I spent most of my preteen years terrified of her relentless practical joking. No one has ever embarrassed me like she could. She was particularly fond of quietly sneaking up behind me and yanking my pants down. Everyone on both sides of my family, my mother's side and my father's side, enjoyed jokes, pranks, and fun at the expense of others. It was almost an official competition. Someone had a good laugh at your expense, and you had to get them back, or at least get someone back. I never got my Aunt Lydia back, probably because she was just too good at it, and I never wanted to encourage more. So a lifetime of friends and relatives have been the butt of my practical joke efforts, probably all in a subconscious effort to get even with my Aunt Lydia. Hence, Lydia's legacy. Speaking of never getting even, I have to mention a very early joke pulled on me by my very own father. I was really young, less than 6 years old. I was roaming around the apartment wearing my red cowboy hat, occasionally drawing and firing my toy six-shooters, imagining myself as a crime-fighting cowboy like Roy Rogers or the Lone Ranger. And my mom walked past me in the hallway and turned into the bathroom, closing the door behind her. It struck my young mind that this was a curiosity. Why does she close the door? I never close the door. My dad goes in there usually without closing the door. What's different in her case? What's going on in there that I don't get to see? I walked over to the door, stopped, and quietly listened. I couldn't hear anything unusual. And then it dawned on me that I could look through the keyhole. It was one of those old-fashioned doors that could be locked with a big old skeleton key. I could look through and maybe see what sort of secret thing she was doing in there. I had some notion that there were structural differences between boys and girls, and I was very curious about that. Maybe this was related. I was extremely nervous about getting caught peeking, but my curiosity was just too strong. I tiptoed up to the door, completely unaware that my father, in the kitchen, could see me from where he was sitting. I gently leaned up against the door, putting my eye up to the keyhole. I could see her in there. It looked like she was sitting on the toilet, reading a book, but it was hard to see more than just a little bit at one time. You kind of had to move around to see more. I was very nervous, but I figured as long as she didn't get up or look at the door, I was safe. I never heard my father open the brown paper bag and start gathering the top, pressing his lips and blowing it up full of air. Nor did I hear him creep up behind me with his shoes off. I was totally unaware of his presence right behind me as he extended his arms, his left hand holding the tightly sealed, air-filled paper bag, his empty hands stretched out to the other side, ready to strike the bag. But I was tingling with nervous excitement as he swung his hands together. Oh! My little body flew through the air as if it had been struck by a bolt of lightning. I landed square on my butt in the middle of the hallway. My father stood there laughing in the doorway of the kitchen. My mother's voice could be heard coming from the bathroom. What was that? I cried uncontrollably for a solid hour. My father laughed a good 5 minutes, and when my mother came out of the bathroom and my father described the whole scene, they both laughed for another 5 minutes. From that moment on, I embarked on a lifelong quest to startle my father as badly as he had startled me. In 50 years, I never succeeded. He was remarkably unflappable. My sister and I both tried over and over. He just couldn't be surprised or startled. Or at least, he was able to never act surprised or startled. When I was 16 years old, I got the best opportunity I had to succeed that I would ever have. Through some circumstance that I don't exactly remember, I found myself at home when I clearly wasn't expected home. My father was due home in a few minutes and should have totally expected to be the only person home. I locked the front door and then hid in the closet at the top of the stairs leading up from the door. The first thing my father would do when he came home into the apartment would be to hang up his jacket in that closet. My plan was to jump up and shout, "Boo!" as he opened the closet door. In fact, I worried that it might be too startling. I only had to wait about 10 minutes. I heard the door unlocking downstairs. And then I heard him climbing the stairs. I heard him walk up to the closet, grab the doorknob, and then open the door. I jumped and shouted, "Boo!" My father casually grabbed a hanger for his jacket, and as he hung it up, said, "When did you get home? Is your room clean?" I may have tried again at some point, but there was clearly no hope. The man just couldn't be startled. But my family's penchant for teasing and practical joking has never died.
I'm a joker, I'm a smoker, I'm a midnight toker. I give my love and all.
After I got married and started a family of my own, it was my turn to build on the family legacy. Despite the fact that my bride didn't start out really appreciating the family's fondness for such abuse, she eventually began participating in it herself. We had a good friend named Peter Gert, who probably spent as much time in our apartment as he did in his own apartment. He had a buddy we knew by the name of Richie Carvel. I have no idea what his real last name was, but because his father owned a Carvel ice cream franchise when he was growing up, he was known as Richie Carvel. Well, one night, while visiting our home along with Peter, Richie made the mistake of falling asleep on my living room floor after a little too much wine. My wife, Roz, immediately took action. She put a small jar of bright red poster paint in a pot of water and put it on the stove. Soon, the paint was warm to the touch. She grabbed a nice broad artist's brush and began gently painting Richie's right ear bright red. She painted the whole ear. We put away the evidence and moved into the kitchen for coffee, leaving Richie behind, sleeping on the living room floor. After a few rounds of coffee, Richie woke up and walked into the kitchen, yawning,
"Man, how long was I sleeping? Sorry to be such a party pooper, but I've got to get home."
We said our goodbyes to Peter and Richie and watched them walk out the door. We laughed and wondered how he would react after Peter drove him home and he finally noticed his right ear was painted bright red. We never imagined the real result. Richie still lived with his parents, who were first-generation Italian-Americans. When he walked in the front door, he was greeted by his father, who had stayed up waiting for him. Spotting his red ear, his father assumed he had been in some kind of drunken brawl and smacked him across the face. "You no good bum! Se c'è truolo, se pazzo bastardo!" His father smacked him all the way to his bedroom. He went to sleep wondering why his father was so mad about him getting home late. When he woke up the next morning, he dragged into the kitchen, feeling a massive hangover. He never noticed the red stains all over his pillow until his mother did and had her own fit of slapping and screaming. I don't think Richie ever came back to our apartment. If he did, he surely knew better than to fall asleep.
I started a joke which started the whole on me. And I started to cry, which started the whole world laughing. Oh, had I only known that the was on me. I looked at the sky, holding my hands over my eyes. I fell out of bed, cursing my head for things that I've said. I finally died, which started the whole world living. Oh, had I that the joke was on me.
Enjoyed that particular joke so much that we were dying for the opportunity to do it again to someone else. And Roz herself was almost the benefactor of our next never fall asleep joke. one night she fell asleep on our sofa. And it was a cheap Danish-style sofa, very simple and very light. Well, Peter and I schemed a devious plan. We would carry the entire sofa, including Roz, down the stairs and out into the street. Once in the street, the plan was to set the sofa down right in the middle of the street, and then one of us would drive a car right up to the sofa, stop a few feet away, and blow the car horn. Imagine waking up from a deep sleep, looking into the headlights of a car in the middle of the street. A potentially mind-altering experience. Well, we failed. Ultimately, as she woke up when we were halfway down the stairs, we were giggling so loud. She was still pretty startled, but it was not nearly what we were aiming for. But the ultimate prank, the one that has reached legendary proportions, one whose story can be brought to the mind of any of my friends and family just by shouting two words, came not long after that attempt on Roz's sanity. One night, Peter visited us with another mutual friend named Sam. Sam was a friend of Peter's who had joined us in the pursuit of professional photography. I don't really remember why, but Peter had cursed him with the playful nickname of Happy Hoopy. I'll never forget that name. On this night, like so many others, Peter came over with Sam, a.k.a. Happy Hoopy, just to hang out and have a good time. Some mood-altering substances were enjoyed, and Sam fell sound asleep on my living room floor with his head propped up against my couch. Of course, this was something that you never wanted to do in my house. As soon as one of us noticed how totally out of it he was, the plot began. We heated up some poster paints on the stove to get them as close to body temperature as we could, just like we had done for Richie. Once the paint was ready, Roz very delicately painted an eye, square in the middle of Sam's forehead. He never reacted to this in the slightest. It was as if he was in a coma. When she was done, he had a pretty realistic eye painted right in the center of his forehead. If he already didn't have two eyes of his own, you would have easily mistaken him for an ancient Greek cyclops. Some hours later, Sam woke up and rejoined the group. It was everything we could do to keep a straight face as we interacted with him. Finally, Peter said it was time to call it a night, and he and Sam got up to leave. Sam needed Peter to drive him home, so they left together. It was well after they left that the legendary two-word phrase was born. On the way to Sam's house, they decided to stop at an all-night diner to get a bite to eat. The diner was maybe half full. But as soon as they entered, everyone began staring at Sam. After all, he had a realistic eye painted in the middle of his forehead. This staring did not go unnoticed by Sam. Sam decided for himself that people must be staring at him because he just woke up and he still looked sleepy. He decided that he needed to go to the men's room to wash his face and wake himself up a little more. Now, obviously, when he goes to the men's room, he's going to see what's been done to him. Who knows what his reaction is going to be? Is he going to laugh? Is he going to be mad at the pranksters who played this joke? I'm sure you all can imagine yourself in this situation and have some idea how you would react to discovering such a prank. Peter remained sitting at the counter, eating his pancakes, waiting for his very possibly pissed off friend to come back out of the restroom. But instead, An enormously loud yell came from the men's room, loud enough for anyone in the restaurant to hear, and loud enough for anyone to understand quite clearly.
My eye!
He didn't shout an expletive directed at the awful prank. He instead appeared to have looked into the mirror and accepted this grotesque eye as his own, shouting,
"My eye!"
To this day, any highly inappropriate reaction by a member of the Fenton family results in the exclamation,
"My eye!"
So there you have it, another episode of Digital Flotsam. I hope you enjoyed it. It was really just a small sampling of the cruel comedy that is the Fenton family legacy. My only hope is that the next time someone you know shouts something that makes no sense, you will shout,
"My eye!"
Or at least hear it in your head like I do. As always, links to all the fine music you heard in the show will appear in the show notes at digitalflotsam.com or .org. And as always, please bow your heads as my good friend Big Owl says,
"And P-Dub, hold the microphone."